Have you ever watched a family member go through like a really bizarre cascading medical journey?
Oh, absolutely. It's actually incredibly common once you start looking for it.
Right. Because my uncle was diagnosed with severe psoriasis in his 30s.
Okay.
And then almost a decade later, seemingly out of nowhere, he developed Crohn's disease.
Yeah. And for a long time, the medical consensus on situations like that was to just treat it as, you know, a terrible coincidence.
Exactly. I mean, usually when we talk about a medical diagnosis, there's this expectation of precision. Like you break a bone, the x-ray shows a jagged white line, and the doctor points right to it.
Right. It's very straightforward.
But step into the world of chronic or complex illness, and the diagnostic waters get incredibly muddy.
They really do.
You hear about someone with inflammatory bowel disease who later develops colon cancer, or a patient with a severe psychiatric disorder who suddenly faces an aggressive autoimmune condition.
And epidemiologists have actually tracked these pairings via medical records for decades. They call them comorbidities.
Right, comorbidities. But the lingering question for, you know, all of us has always been why. Is it just bad luck, or is there some fundamental hidden blueprint dictating how these seemingly disconnected dots connect?
Well, epidemiological data is fantastic at telling us that two diseases co-occur, but it is notoriously terrible at telling us why.
Because it's just looking at the statistics, right?
Exactly. Knowing that two conditions frequently happen to the same person doesn't explain the underlying biological mechanism. It doesn't tell us what the cells are actually doing to create that domino effect.
Yeah.
Historically, medicine has categorized diseases primarily by the organ they affect, you know, digestive, respiratory, neurological.
But that's starting to change.
It is. What we're finding now is that organs are really just the real estate. The actual mechanics of the disease operate on a totally different level.
Which perfectly brings us to our mission for this deep dive. Today, we're looking at a landmark 2025 research paper published in PNAS by Erda Garcia and colleagues.
It's a fascinating study.
It really is. Our goal today is to explore how these researchers used massive data sets of RNA sequencing to map out the hidden molecular networks that dictate why diseases gang up on you.
And perhaps even more surprisingly, why some diseases actively protect you from others.
Yes, that part blew my mind. But, okay, let's unpack this. Before we get into the wild connections they uncovered, we need to understand the methodology.
Right, the how.
We're talking about transcriptomics here. So looking at significantly differentially expressed genes, or SDEGs.
Which is a bit of a mouthful.
It is. Mm-hmm. But for those of you listening who follow genetics, you know that having a gene in your DNA doesn't mean your body is actively using it.
Exactly. Your DNA is just the library. The RNA sequencing tells us what books are actually being checked out and read.
Right. It tells us what is actually being transcribed, what's turned up, and what's turned down at the exact moment the sample is taken.
And that differential expression, that's the disease's molecular fingerprint.
Okay. So how do the researchers use that fingerprint?
Well, the team took a purely molecular approach. They analyzed transcriptomic data from 72 different human diseases using over 4,000 individual patient samples.
Wow, that is a lot of data.
It's huge. And they built a disease similarity network, or DSN, by comparing these RNA profiles across all 72 of those diseases.
So they were basically looking for matches.
Yes. They looked at which diseases shared similar patterns of upregulated and downregulated genes. Then they cross-referenced their purely molecular map against massive real-world epidemiological databases.
Yeah, and what did they find?
Without knowing anything about the patient's actual medical histories, their RNA-based network accurately matched nearly half, about 46.2% of all medically known comorbidities.
That's incredible. But wait, let me push back on that methodology for a second.
Sure.
Because transcriptomics is incredibly sensitive, right? It's a snapshot of a cell's activity at a specific moment in time.
It is. Very sensitive to its environment.
So if you take 1,000 patients with a severe condition like inflammatory bowel disease, almost all of them are going to be on heavy medications, immunosuppressants, steroids, things like that.
That's a very valid point.
So how do the researchers know they're mapping the molecular fingerprint of the disease itself and not just, you know, mapping the biological side effects of the drugs those patients are taking?
That is the exact hurdle that has plagued transcriptomic research for years. It's called pharmacological noise.
Right, the drug noise. How did they get around it?
To account for that, Erda Garcia and her team utilized extensive controlled data sets and very strict filtering algorithms to isolate the disease signature.
Oh, so they compared them to healthy people.
Yes, they compared disease tissue samples against healthy, non-medicated control tissues from the exact same organs. They focus strictly on the differentially expressed genes that drive the pathology, not the metabolic pathways processing the medications.
Okay, that makes total sense. So they filter out the drug noise, build this map, and predict nearly half of all known comorbidities. Let's look at the mechanisms they found then. What is the biological common denominator when diseases team up? Like, what's actually happening in the cells?
The overarching commonality is pretty striking. Over 95% of these overlapping epidemiological interactions share overexpressed pathways related to the immune system.
95%, that's almost all of them.
Right. And running parallel to that immune dysfunction, they found widespread alterations in the extracellular matrix, or ECM.
Okay, for the listener, the extracellular matrix isn't just like a physical trellis or scaffolding that holds cells together, although it does do that.
It does, but it's much more than that.
Yeah, it's a highly dynamic biochemical signaling hub. When the ECM gets dysregulated, it's not just that the physical structure of the tissue is breaking down.
Exactly. The chemical signals being sent to the surrounding cells, particularly immune cells, get completely scrambled.
So the ECM essentially dictates cellular behavior.
It does. When a primary disease fundamentally alters that matrix, it reshapes the entire microenvironment. The paper highlights several clinical examples of this.
Like what?
Well, inflammatory bowel disease, for instance, shares profound ECM alterations with colorectal cancer and ulcers.
So going back to what we talked about at the beginning.
Yes, the cellular environment is being remodeled in a way that makes the tissue highly susceptible to all three conditions.
That's terrifying, but it makes so much sense.
They also mapped connections between Kaposi's sarcoma and HIV, driven by shared immune deficiency pathways. And they even found deep molecular links between schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, and autism.
Wow. I look at this kind of like a computer operating system.
Oh, I like that. How so?
Well, if you install a software patch meant to fix a bug in your email application, let's call that the primary disease altering the immune system, that patch might inadvertently change a core code library.
Right.
And suddenly your web browser crashes every time you open it. Not because the browser was directly attacked, but because it relied on that same shared underlying code. The secondary disease is just an opportunistic crash caused by the new biological environment.
That operating system analogy works perfectly. It really highlights how interconnected the underlying code is, regardless of the front-end application.
Yeah.
But exploring how shared code causes multiple crashes leads to a completely different and arguably more fascinating phenomenon.
Oh, you're talking about the inverse comorbidities.
Yes. If similar transcriptomic profiles cause diseases to co-occur, we have to ask what happens when two diseases demand completely opposite molecular profiles.
This was the part of the paper that forced me to completely rethink how I view illness.
It's counterintuitive, right?
Totally. Because if two diseases are trying to do the exact opposite things at the cellular level, they essentially repel each other.
Exactly. The paper calls these inverse comorbidities. There are diseases that co-occur in the real world significantly less often than random chance would allow.
Meaning having one actively protects you from the other?
Precisely. And the data provides a very clear example of this biological tug of war. The study examined Huntington's disease, which is a fatal neurodegenerative disorder. According to the RNA sequencing data, Huntington's has a massive negative interaction with liver cancer, lung cancer, breast cancer, and leukemia.
Okay, let me just make sure I'm framing this correctly for the listener. Are the researchers saying that having a severe, debilitating neurodegenerative disorder like Huntington's actually makes your body hostile to tumor formation?
The data strongly supports that conclusion, yes.
That is wild.
It is. When the team analyzed the pathways altered in both Huntington's and those specific cancers, they found that in 85% of the shared pathways, the two diseases exhibit completely opposite molecular tendencies.
Let's dive into the mechanism there, the actual how and why, because it's brilliant.
Yeah, let's break it down.
So cancer is fundamentally a disease of unstoppable aggressive growth. It requires massive cellular resources.
Constant division.
Right. So the RNA of a tumor shows a massive overexpression of cell cycle genes. Specifically, cancer turns up the production of these things called kinesins.
Kinesins, yes. The motor proteins.
Yeah, they're these tiny molecular motor proteins that literally walk along the cellular scaffolding to transport materials, organelles, and chromosomes inside the cell.
They're the supply lines.
Exactly. If a cell is rapidly dividing, it needs those supply lines running at absolute maximum capacity.
Tumors are incredibly resource-hungry engines, but the transcriptomic profile of Huntington's disease is the exact inverse of that.
because it's a degenerative disease.
Right. Huntington's pathology is driven by increased apoptosis, which is programmed cell death and severe mitochondrial dysfunction. It relies on the negative regulation of gene transcription.
So what happens to the kinesins?
Those kinesin motor proteins you mentioned. In a Huntington's environment, they are severely underexpressed. The biological supply lines are essentially dismantled.
So a tumor literally cannot physically grow in a biological environment primed for Huntington's.
It can't. The cellular machinery it needs for rapid division simply isn't there to be hijacked.
That is just, I mean, nature is brutal, but incredibly efficient.
It gets even more complex. The immune system pathways also behave in an entirely opposite manner.
Oh, right, the interleukins.
Yes. The transcriptomic data shows that Huntington's triggers an increase in interleukin 12, or IL-12, alongside the activation of the complement cascade.
And IL-12 is a cytokine that stimulates T cells and natural killer cells.
Exactly. So when Huntington's artificially cranks up IL-12 expression, it basically puts the body's immune system on high alert. It creates a microenvironment that is constantly patrolling for and highly toxic to initial tumor formation.
It's an incredible biological trade-off.
Yeah.
But as fascinating as this map is, I keep coming back to a glaring flaw in the initial model.
The 46.2% match.
Yeah. I mean, matching nearly half of all real-world comorbidities is a huge leap forward, obviously. But it means the model is failing to predict the other half.
It does.
The disease similarity network is clearly missing something massive.
You're entirely right. And the researchers knew it. The initial network suffered from a foundational assumption that clinical medicine has also struggled with for centuries.
Which is?
It treated diseases as monoliths.
Wow.
The model assumed that, say, breast cancer or schizophrenia is the exact same molecular disease in every single person who receives that diagnosis.
But human biology is vastly more messy than our clinical labels suggest.
Vastly more heterogeneous, yes.
Well, here's where it gets really interesting.
Yeah.
Because the researchers recognize this limitation. Right? They realized they couldn't just lump all breast cancer patients into one giant data pool.
Right. And so they introduced the most vital breakthrough of the entire study, patient stratification.
Patient stratification. Walk us through that.
They utilized clustering algorithms on the RNA data to group patients with the same clinical diagnosis into distinct, highly specific molecular subgroups. They termed these subgroups metapatients.
Metapatients, okay.
So the methodology shifted from comparing broad disease categories to comparing patients whose transcriptomic fingerprints for a specific disease look nearly identical.
Think about that from a patient perspective. Imagine going to a specialist, and instead of just hearing, you have breast cancer, they tell you, you have transcriptomic metaprofile type B.
Exactly. It's a whole new level of precision.
And when the researchers rebuilt the entire network using these highly specific metapatients, creating what they call the stratified similarity network, or SSN, their predictive accuracy didn't just inch up, it skyrocketed.
It really did. The ability to predict known medical comorbidities jumped from that initial 46.2% to over 64%. That leap in predictive power proves that the molecular nuances between individuals are not just background noise. They are the primary drivers of secondary disease risk.
So your vulnerability doesn't depend on the broad clinical name of your primary diagnosis at all?
Not entirely, no. It depends almost exclusively on your specific molecular flavor of that disease.
The paper breaks down the breast cancer data to illustrate this beautifully. They separated breast cancer patients into three distinct metapatient groups based on hormone receptor status.
Right, the estrogen positive, estrogen negative, and triple negative groups.
Yeah. And while they all fall under the clinical umbrella of breast cancer, their comorbidity risks are wildly divergent.
They are. The stratified network revealed that estrogen positive and estrogen negative profiles share an exclusive negative interaction with multiple sclerosis.
So if a patient has one of those specific molecular subtypes of breast cancer, their biological environment is deeply hostile to developing MS.
Exactly.
Which naturally raises the question of why. I mean, we know MS is an autoimmune disease that strips the myelin off nerves.
Yes.
So estrogen-positive breast cancers must involve specific hormone-driven pathways that likely alter the neuroinflammatory markers required to trigger MS.
That's the leading theory, yes. But it gets more specific. If you have the triple negative flavor of breast cancer, you don't get that specific protective effect against MS at all.
Right. Instead, the triple negative and estrogen negative metapatients show a strong, unique, positive interaction with autism and bipolar disorder.
The clinical implications of this stratification are just profound.
It changes everything about how we look at prognosis.
It does. Under the current paradigm, an oncologist treating breast cancer is focused almost exclusively on eradicating the tumor. And rightfully so.
Of course.
But the stratified similarity network suggests that the moment of initial diagnosis offers a critical predictive window.
Because if an oncologist knows the specific molecular subtype of the tumor, they also know with a high degree of statistical certainty which secondary diseases the patient's body is currently vulnerable to.
And which ones it's building a fortress against.
Which leads me to wonder about the blind spots in modern medicine.
What do you mean?
Well, if this stratified similarity network is this accurate at mapping known diseases, what hidden underdiagnosed connections is it revealing right now? Like, where is the RNA data seeing things that human doctors have historically missed?
Yes. The paper uses Down syndrome as a prime case study for uncovering exactly these kinds of hidden connections.
Which is interesting, because clinically, Down syndrome is often viewed as the ultimate genetic monolith.
Right. It originates from trisomy 21, the presence of a third copy of chromosome 21. It's generally treated as a very uniform condition.
Yeah, you either have the third chromosome or you don't. It seems like a straightforward binary genetic origin.
Yet, when the researchers applied their clustering algorithms to the transcriptomic data of Down syndrome patients, the meta-patient profiles were incredibly heterogeneous.
It's not a single molecular profile at all.
Not even close. The data showed that less than a quarter of disease interactions are consistent across all Down syndrome meta-patients.
Less than 25% of their disease risks are shared. That completely shatters the idea of a monolithic condition.
It really does. And when you look at the specific hidden associations the RNA data uncovered, it explains some long-standing clinical mysteries.
Give us an example.
Well, the molecular network confirmed a heavily elevated risk of childhood leukemia, which aligns with clinical observations, but it also mapped out a markedly lower incidence of solid tumors.
Like breast, lung, prostate, and colorectal cancers.
Exactly. The unique immune remodeling happening in these patients actively suppresses solid tumor formation.
But the biological trade-off for that tumor suppression is severe.
It is.
Because trisomy 21 includes extra copies of genes related to interferon receptors. And interferons are proteins that crank up the immune system's antiviral and anti-tumor responses.
They're the immune system's alarm bells.
Right. And because of this interferon-driven immune hyperactivity, Down syndrome patients have a massive six-fold increased risk of developing celiac disease.
Yeah.
Their immune system is so hypervigilant that it starts shredding the lining of their own gut.
And the network also revealed a very strong, often hidden link to lupus.
Lupus is notoriously difficult to diagnose, isn't it? Even in the general population.
Extremely difficult. And in individuals with Down syndrome, the symptoms of lupus-like fatigue, joint pain, rashes, might easily be attributed to other known aspects of their primary condition.
So it just gets missed.
Frequently. But the transcriptomic data serves as an empirical red flag. It indicates that the molecular environment for lupus is fully primed in these specific patients. It prompts clinicians to look closer.
And what I find so encouraging about this entire study is that the researchers didn't just publish their findings and, you know, lock the methodology in a vault.
No, they made it accessible.
They built an open access web application. Anyone, researchers, clinicians, or listeners of this deep dive, can log on, select a disease, and explore these intricate webs of positive and negative interactions.
It's a fantastic resource.
You can literally watch the molecular relationships light up and spot potential underdiagnosed conditions based purely on the data.
Providing open access to the stratified similarity network fundamentally shifts how the medical community can approach complex illness. Comorbidities are no longer just statistical bad luck.
They possess a profound, mappable molecular basis.
Exactly. By stratifying patients into distinct molecular subgroups, this research really lays the groundwork for a transition from reactive symptom management to proactive, personalized medicine.
Imagine a near-future scenario where, upon getting sick, your physician doesn't just treat that primary illness in isolation.
Right.
Instead, they immediately sequence your specific RNA fingerprint.
Mm-hmm.
And by understanding your unique meta-patient profile, they can actively anticipate and deploy therapies to block the secondary diseases you are uniquely vulnerable to.
Long before a single symptom ever manifests, it redefines the entire goal of medical intervention.
Yeah.
You aren't just altering the trajectory of a single disease anymore, you are managing the entire biological ecosystem. By understanding the underlying code, you can predict exactly how a perturbation in one system will cascade into another.
Which leaves us with a final, somewhat provocative thought to ponder.
I love these, let's hear it.
We've spent this deep dive exploring how molecular fingerprints dictate what diseases we will get, and crucially, what we won't get. We know the precise mechanisms, like the suppression of canosin motors and the spike in IL-12, that allow Huntington's disease to create an environment that starves out cancer.
We do.
So, could we one day artificially induce a temporary inverse comorbidity profile?
Oh, wow.
Right. Could a doctor someday deploy a targeted therapeutic that temporarily triggers a localized Huntington's-like molecular state in a patient just for a few weeks and strictly confined to one specific organ simply to starve out an aggressive growing tumor?
Utilizing the molecular blueprint of one devastating disease as a precision weapon to eradicate another, that represents the absolute frontier of transcriptomic research.
It sounds a bit like science fiction.
It sounds speculative, sure, but this paper demonstrates that the biological instructions for that kind of intervention already exist within our cells. We are finally just developing the capacity to read them.
So what does this all mean for you listening at home? It means the murky diagnostic landscape of chronic illness is finally coming into focus.
It really is.
We may not always be able to rely on a traditional X-ray to show us where the system is broken. But by reading the RNA, we've found a completely different way to illuminate the underlying architecture of human health.
Beautifully said.
Thank you for joining us on this exploration of the invisible molecular threads that tie our biology together. Because as this research proves, in the complex ecosystem of the human body, absolutely nothing happens in isolation. Until next time, keep diving deep.
Click.